Did you know that your medical school application GPA will likely not be the same as your transcript GPA? There are lots of reasons for that, and it can be frustrating, but there is a free, easy way to calculate your medical school application GPA at mapped.com. That's MAPPD.com. Using Mapped app, which is now free to use for a GPA calculator, this is a new change. So if you've checked out Mapped before, if it's been a while, go check it out. We've come a long way with Mapped app. And now with our free tier, after your 30-day free trial, using the referral code 30 days free, that's all one word, all capital letters, 30, the number 30 days free. After that free trial of using all of the amazing features inside of Mapped, you can now continue to use Mapped for free. Again, that's mapped.com, M-A-P-P-D.com. Specialty Story, session number 203. Whether you are a pre-med or a medical student, you've answered the calling to become a physician. Soon you'll have to start deciding what type of medicine you'll want to practice. This podcast will tell you the stories of specialists from every field to give you the information to make sure you make the most informed decision possible when it comes to choosing your specialty. Welcome to Specialty Stories. My name is Dr. Ryan Gray, your host here every week, where I get to have amazing conversations with physicians about their specialty of choice. This week is no different. I get to talk to a physician about transgender psychiatry and psychosomatic medicine. We talk to Dr. Hansel Arroyo about his journey to transgender psychiatry, what he loves about it, how he made a fellowship for it, and so much more. We start the conversation by talking to Dr. Arroyo about his interest in transgender psychiatry.
I became interested in psychiatry very early on, I think around high school, the beginning of high school. I was at that point really into understanding human behavior and what made people feel the way they felt or react the way they reacted. And as a sort of like an extension of that, also ultimately really want to understand why I react the way I react, why I feel the way I feel, I think was like really like the selfish origin of this. And my mom was really was really smart, and she gave me this book called Emotional Intelligence by Fender Goldberg, and you know, it was kind of like famous in the 90s, and there was like this whole like EQ movement, and it really like opened up a lot of sort of like the connection between our brain and our kind of more kind of abstract human emotions and our thoughts. And I got really interested in sort of getting to understand that connection. At that point, I thought I wanted to go more into psychology, but then once I hit college, the more biological component of this was really attracted to me. So I did an undergrad in biology and with psychology, and then, you know, went to medical school sort of like with a one track mind. I'm going to do psychiatry. And so I kind of powered through every other rotation through med school with the goal to just get into psychiatry. And then I moved to New York to train at Mount Sinai Hospital, where I did my adult psychiatry residency. And, you know, that sort of took me into, that really opened it up. And I didn't know at that point how much subspecialties in the field of psychiatry there were, and how you can really kind of tailor the world of being a psychiatrist into something that kind of fits your interest. For me, it was working with people with chronic medical conditions and people in disadvantaged positions, particularly like either racial minorities and sexual minorities. And so during residency, I focused a lot in working on originally with Hispanics and providing care for patients who didn't necessarily have access to care, right? Mental health, unfortunately, lives in a world where you kind of have to have to have access, you have to have either like really good insurance or to pay out of pocket. There's really a lot of sort of like barriers to it. And in the community that I was working in New York City, there was particularly a community who were undocumented, didn't speak Spanish, and it was really hard for them to get access to mental health services. You know, as you can imagine, there's not a lot of psychiatrists of color, not a lot of psychiatrists who are Spanish speaking. So there was like this community was sort of being neglected. And so I worked a lot with them developing programs to improve access to care. That kind of really got me excited to improve access to care to other communities that I was interested in, particularly the LGBT community. And I started working with people living with HIV, which led to me working with people with the trans experience. And so I, after residency, I went to fellowship in consultation liaison psychiatry, or previously known as psychosomatic medicine, where I purely just focused in caring for people living with HIV. And then that branched into trans folk, and then 5 years ago, a group of doctors and I, a group of like surgeons and primary care doctors and psychiatrists, we opened up a center for transgender patients, which is the Center for Transgender Medicine and Surgery.
Yeah, that's awesome. And really a great example of how once you found your passion for a specific specialty, really focusing in, honing in on a specific niche within that just the patient spoke to you and you were excited to wake up every day and go take care of those patients. So something I want everyone to realize that you can find whatever it is out there that you're passionate about and create that opportunity for yourself. What are some of the skills or traits you think that are important for someone who may be interested in transgender psychiatry to have?
Yeah, I think for people to be like interested in this field, you have to have like the type of, first you have to have like the heart for the community. But I think historically the trans community has had a lot of barriers to medical care in general. And then on top of that to mental health care, because the relationship between mental health and the trans community has historically not been a positive one. Initially for trans people in America to either get access to hormone therapy or to get access to surgeries, they were, you know, for lack of a better word, forced to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist for a period of like a year. And then after a year of you trying to convince a psychiatrist or psychologist that you were trans, then you were allowed to get hormones, and then you have to spend another chunk of time, you know, being in quote unquote therapy so that you can get access to surgery. So it was timely, it was costly, it was very sort of like gatekeepy, and a lot of trans folks still have that mentality that is what mental health services look like for trans people. And so first I would say that, you know, good quality is to be aware of that history, to have an open heart, to know that there might be some people in the community who might not have kind of greet you with open arms. To care for the community is really important, and to sort of like understand how there's so much like intersections in the trans community. That they're not sort of like this kind of like monolithic community, that there are trans people who may want to transition, that there are trans people who may not. There are trans people who need like hormone services, others may not, others may need surgical services. And there are trans people that come to see a mental health provider for things that are unrelated to, you know, transness, that is just related to kind of day-to-day human life. So to kind of like have that sensitivity and mentality is a key component.
Yeah. For the medical students or residents that you may be interacting with on a daily or weekly basis, what are some of the biggest myths or misconceptions that those early on in the medical world have about transgender psychiatry?
You know, I don't know if there's many because, you know, transgender psychiatry in the way that we see it now is very new. The Transgender Psychiatry Fellowship that I created was the first one in the nation, and it's, you know, what, 4 years old. There was never like a dedicated group of people kind of doing this sort of work. There were definitely silos like around the United States of providers that would specialize in trans folk. But, you know, there wasn't this sort of like cohesive way of approaching it. And I think that's fairly new. I think like some of the I would say that people come in sort of kind of blank slate, where they come into like into the clinic, or they come into to do a rotation at our services, because there's really not a lot out there. Even, you know, if you think of research, if you think of published work, you know, there were in the 90s, there was like less than like 5 articles on trans being published a year. And, you know, that number has sort of like increased over the years, but still there wasn't a lot of sort of like information out there.
Yeah. Interesting. So talk about the day-to-day life. What does that look like for you as a transgender psychiatrist, as a fellowship program director? What does that look like for you?
So it's an outpatient setting, which means that you have a very kind of structured day, which I really love. So, you know, it's sort of like working outside of the hospital. It's a scheduled sort of visits. It's a, you know, very kind of clean 9-to-5, where you see patients for like initial intakes for an hour, and for follow-ups for, depending on what you're doing. If you're doing just medication management, it's, you know, 20 to 30 minutes. For those doing psychotherapy, it's 45 minutes. And, you know, we do a variety of different things at the clinic. We, you know, patients can come in just to see you once if they are interested in a surgical procedure. You know, I think before I mentioned that the guidelines require that patients be in therapy for a period of time at some point a year before they could get access to gender affirming treatments. You know, those guidelines have changed, and that is no longer the requirement, but there is still this insurance requirement that if a trans individual is interested in obtaining surgery, they still have to be cleared, quote unquote, by a mental health provider. So part of our job is to offer that service so that it is as seamless and easy as possible for individuals. And then there's the patients who you see kind of longitudinally, right? People who have may have mental illness, and they want to address their mental illness with us. So, you know, that's sort of like the type of patients that I'll be seeing, right? The ones that I develop like really kind of interesting relationships that you see for a long period of time, either in therapy or for medications. And the sort of like the ones that just come in once, and they're like, hey, I need this letter to be able to get this surgery. You know, we do like a 45, 60 minute evaluation, and then, you know, they're out the door.
Yeah. Interesting. So for patients who may be in crisis, who go to emergency department, it doesn't sound like for transgender psychiatry, you're going to the hospital, you're seeing patients. It's going to be whoever's on call in the hospital seeing those patients.
Right. So that would be sort of like the mental health or provider that's available in the emergency room. You know, something that we're trying to do at my hospital is to include an educational component to all levels of providers in trans health. Because, you know, there was this study that came out of like how much time is dedicated in residency and medical school in transgender health. And it came out to be less than 4 hours, like I think it was like 3.6 hours total time dedicated to this in a 4-year period. So like that's very little time. You know, before I was mentioning how there was, you know, there's people aren't as aware, people don't have enough knowledge about it, definitely not at the medical school level, and then at the residency level, depending on where you are, there might be more exposure than not. So we're trying to make sure that providers, not just the ones that are working at the Center for Transgender Medicine and Surgery, because you know those people are like already specialized in this, but the people who aren't kind of quote unquote specialized in this, that they have a base of knowledge. So if you are a trans individual going to the emergency room, you know that you're going to be meeting somebody who's like culturally competent, who knows how to address your needs. And you know, we've had ER stories of patients going to for, I don't know, like, let's make something up, like they were playing a sport and, you know, they fell and sprained their ankle, and then the ER provider spends the entire time just asking them about transgender stuff, like hormones, surgeries, like sexual activity. And, you know, they're doing it like, and I would hope they're doing it because there's a sense of curiosity and they want to be respectful. But, you know, with the proper training, you know that that is not.
My leg's broken, dude. Fix my leg.
Right. I'm still a fully human being.
Yeah. I had another conversation with a transgender medicine physician, and she basically said, my hope is that there isn't a need for me in the future, that every patient, it's not very complicated to take care of trans patients. It's just, number one, that you care, and number one, you ask the questions, and obviously that we get whatever baseline of training everyone needs as we go through medical training. Do you kind of see that as the same kind of mentality of like, we shouldn't need transgender medicine specific physicians. Everyone should be able to take care of these people.
100%. I think like we went from having a void, right, 5-6 years ago in the medical field where nobody was, you know, like where trans people were like going to different places and there wasn't any like formal kind of collecting of data, research, or providers. It wasn't very visible. To like now having sort of these super hyper specialized locations throughout the United States that are very kind of trans affirming and gender affirming. And I think that was just like the pendulum swinging to like the opposite side from lack to access. And then hopefully it'll land somewhere in the middle where you still maybe have a couple of like silos or hubs where it's just specialized for trans folk, but that everybody, you know, can see, trans individuals, you know, like how like most clinics work, right? You have, you know, I worked at a clinic for people living with HIV. And sure, you can go there if you want to be treated, but, you know, your primary care doctor should also have enough knowledge to be able to care for you and to care for those needs as well. Right? It's not that complex.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully that is the future.
Yeah. Interesting. So the training path now, I know transgender medicine or transgender psychiatry is still very new, and you've set up a fellowship program. What does the training path look like to get through your training program?
Yeah. So the applicants usually have to have completed the 4-year adult psychiatry residency program. We do have the option for those who are in their PGY4 to come in and do the fellowship during their PGY4 if their residency allows it. We've had previous fellows who the PGY4 year is sort of like open-ended, and then you can go and do like a subspecialty during that year as long as you comply with whatever their minimal requirements are. And so we do also accept residents in that, but the majority have already completed a 4-year residency. And then the program is a 1-year program, and you work in at the Center for Transgender Medicine in New York with collaborating with our group of psychologists, psychiatrists, and transgender psychiatry is it's one of those fields that has like their kind of branches in other fields. So of course, there's a surgical component, and so the fellow trains with the transgender surgical fellow as well to learn about the surgeries. You know, the psychiatric fellow is not necessarily going into surgery, so they can to observe. But, you know, it's a very kind of highly collaborative environment. We're also collaborating a lot with the endocrinologists and the primary care doctors, because there's a lot of sort of like interconnections between like the hormones, treatments, patients' moods, and how they are affected by this, and then their access to surgery. So it has like those three major columns, but then there's also a lot of collaboration with social work. We have spiritual care available. We have collaboration with infectious disease doctors. So it's a very kind of interesting place for a psychiatrist to be sort of surrounded in like the outer rings of the interactions being not necessarily psychiatry.
Yeah.
I think that's like one of the beauties and why people are also attracted to this field, because you can go to other fields in psychiatry where you're sort of like isolated within the field of psychiatry and just kind of interacting with other psychiatrists. We're here, you're learning about surgery, you're learning about hormone treatments, and then they're learning about you and the dynamics that you can provide.
Yeah, it's interesting. The more I have psychiatrists on, especially consultation liaison psychiatry, on how much medicine is involved in that psychiatry world. And then the niches with transgender psychiatry, transplant psychiatry I've talked to, it sounds amazing. Perinatal psychiatry is like all these little interesting nooks and crannies that I never knew about going through medical school. And I'm like, wow, maybe I would have been interested in going to psychiatry if I knew about these things. So I'm excited that all this is out there for you. So for the future primary care doc out there listening to this, what do you want them to know about transgender psychiatry, about taking care of their patients to help you and to hopefully maybe not need you in the future?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that there has to be some cultural competency when you are interacting with trans folk, right? Like to be mindful that we do see kind of higher rates of discrimination, higher rates of depression, anxiety, of trauma, and that is going to be a big part of their care. Of when you're seeing a trans patient who may not have like the best compliance with their treatment, with the best compliance with their appointments, to also address the other like layers of who this person is. And that's a lot when we come in, right? Where we want to be able to provide therapy to address issues that may not be so prevalent. A trans woman is likely to see a primary care provider first, and as most patients see a primary care provider first, overseeing a mental health provider. And, you know, to be having that sort of like attuned mentality to know that there are this other dynamics, social dynamics of rejection and discrimination that are playing along, that even if you misgender somebody that comes into your office, that may trigger a lot of trauma and PTSD that might be there sort of like behind the surface. And so to have like a low threshold to say, okay, you know, should we be talking to somebody? Do you need an additional help? As we know, unfortunately, there are higher rates of suicide in the trans community over the general population. And, you know, that goes up to like almost 8 times higher than the general population. So to have that sort of like sensibility is key.
Yeah.
And to be able to refer to mental health services when, you know, these sort of like red flags come up.
Yeah. It even starts, I have a child with a disability, so that inclusiveness and feeling of belonging is there as well. Very similar, I would assume. I would even see it from like intake forms at your clinic. Are they very binary in terms of gender, or are you inclusive for everything and how you answer the phones and questions you ask when you're bringing people on? So there's lots of ways to just very simple ways to include everyone and not hopefully exclude them and make them feel like they're not wanted. So for the kind of day-to-day world that you live in, it sounds like very much all of the different aspects of people that you're working with. Is there one specialty that you work the closest with day in and day out?
I would say the primary care endocrinologists.
Okay.
So they are So they are, the way that we design the clinic is, I hope, sort of like the future in which a lot of clinics are designed, which is, you know, having all services to be located in one place. It's often that you go to your primary care doctor and then they're like, okay, you should be seeing this therapist. They are in this other location and the next appointment is in, you know, 7 weeks. And then there's patients get lost in the middle of that. So we structured it in which that we're all in the same location. There's like one medical corridor, there's one like kind of mental health social work corridor. And then there is like nursing is there, social work is there. So that, you know, that that has really like improved like access to care and improved compliance in care, because it's kind of very warm handoff when the primary care provider, which is, you know, to your question, the people that we kind of interact the most with, meet a patient, you know, they may do some kind of basic screening for mental health issues. And then they kind of walk to our office and say like, hey, this is so-and-so, I'm going to schedule an appointment with you. We meet them for, you know, very briefly. And then the patient kind of like already has an image of who they're meeting, who they're going to be with. And it really is extremely helpful.
Yeah. What do you like the most about your job?
Getting to meet people. I love to like, like seeing and hearing their stories, and, you know, psychiatry can be very beautiful because people get better and it's not necessarily immediate. It's not the type of field where if you are really into kind of immediate gratification, you want to see somebody get better like in a few days, that's not going to happen. But if you want to see somebody kind of progress throughout their lives, right? I ask people a lot about how their mental illness affects their you know, their love life, their family life, their work, their ability to live a kind of fulfilling life. And so when I'm measuring progress, I'm taking into account all these little like parts of their lives. And I love seeing like, oh, you know, before we started seeing each other, you couldn't hold a relationship, and now you've been in one for this amount of time. Or, you know, before it was hard for you to focus in completing homework, and now look at this, you got a good grade on this. You know, so like in a way, it's a way to measure medical progress in a non-medical way. Mm. And I love getting to know people to that level.
Yeah. What do you like the least?
What do I like the least? I mean, like anything, nobody likes like the administrative kind of world of medicine.
Charting, billing, all that fun stuff. Billing,
all that fun stuff. Yeah. Dealing with insurance companies that don't want to pay for a 45-minute visit, but rather pay for a 15-minute visit. That's a pain. I'm glad that, you know, at the hospital, that's sort of like taken away from you, but and you get the least pressure of that, but it is stressful.
Yeah.
When patients have been seeing you for a period amount of time, and then the intern is like, no, thank you, we're not going to pay for this anymore.
Yeah. If you had to do it all over again, would you still be in transgender psychiatry?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I love that I was kind of like had a couple of stepping stones in HIV in psychiatry, and sort of kind of community minority work that led me to where I am. I would not change anything at all.
Nice. Any last words of wisdom for those listening who may be interested in transgender medicine in one way or another, including transgender psychiatry?
Yeah, I would say that to get involved with like local LGBT either clinics or programs. Often they're around like cities, free clinics. If you're interested and you're not in residency yet, or you're still in medical school, or even thinking about going to medical school, and you have a heart for the community, just look into, you know, your local city or town and see if there's any like LGBT support groups, free clinics. I think that's a great place to be exposed, to learn, and to sort of feed that interest.
All right, there you have it. Again, Dr. Hansel Arroyo. If you are interested potentially in psychiatry, more specifically in transgender psychiatry, do a quick Google search for Hansel Arroyo and find out all the amazing things that he is up to. Such a great specialty for a needed population. Hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time here on Specialty Stories.
This is MedEd Media.